You are listening to the audio podcast of Gethsemane Baptist Church, located in Long Beach, California, pastored by Eli Reynolds.
And it's on. Can you hear it? Whoa, listen to that. That's fantastic. It's been great being back with you all again. We were here a couple of years ago for the first time to do some training with you guys and met Pastor Eli and some of the team, and now we've gotten to meet some more of the ushers and security team and some more of the folks here at church, and it's great to be back. It's great to be visiting again. I sure enjoyed the service this morning. It's good to hear good preaching, and I'm sure you'll hear some more next Sunday night when you come back. So I want to talk a little bit about Operation Mordecai, about what we do and why we do it and things like that, but before I kind of run off and start in on the message that I have and how it ties into the ministry that we do, let's go ahead and open this meeting up with a word of prayer. Lord, I just thank you so much for this church being here, Lord. I thank you so much for the opportunity we've had to come and visit with them, Lord, and what a blessing they've been. Lord, I just pray that you would be a blessing to this church, would just grant them, Lord, fruit to their account. Lord, would just bless their efforts, would just grow this place and help them to be a mighty tool for your use. And I pray this in your name. Amen. So our ministry is a little bit unique. Pastor mentioned that this morning. We do church security training. We do missions security work, I guess, if you will, whether that's training missionaries or going to foreign countries that are difficult to get into or difficult to operate in or things like this. And I was actually chatting with Brother Jeff this afternoon. And you know all the places in the world where the gospel hasn't gone yet? The reason the gospel hasn't gone there yet is because it's hard to get there. And so we train missionaries who are going to go there, and you know that's really our calling in missions, is to get there. But in the States, we train church security teams like we did here at this church. And I want to talk a little bit about that because I think we understand the culture that we live in today, that it's necessary for us to have some safety. I think we see what's happening around our entire country, real big shift culturally. In fact, such a big shift culturally, I was telling Pastor, this is a different place than it was 2 years ago when I was here. It's changed drastically even since we were here last in 2022. I think we understand that we need some safety, we need some protection. The Bible says that the prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. Perhaps we're not hiding ourselves, but we are preparing, right? We're foreseeing that we live in more dangerous times now than we have in the past, and we're preparing ourselves for that. But I think one of the things we need to understand with that is the why. Why are we doing this? Because I'm a firm believer that why you do something changes maybe what you do. It certainly changes how you do it, and it definitely changes your sort of entire approach to what you're doing. And so our security is just a part of fighting a war. I was in the military. I was in the Army myself, and I know several of your guys here are military. And I approach it kind of from that mindset because that's sort of what I know, I suppose. And in war, security is an essential part of operating. Right? You can't operate in a combat environment, without having good security. Right? It's essential. We need it. But that's not the whole point, is it? If all we do is protect ourselves, we're not fighting an enemy, are we? Right? And so what we need to understand is the reason we're doing security and the reason we're teaching churches how to have some security for them is because the church is in a war. Right? And it's a spiritual war. And we know this, and we're pretty familiar with the concept. And I was talking to the security guys, a lot of times what happens is we regulate that concept of spiritual war to like ideological concept or a figurative war, right? But what I want to tell you tonight is it's a real war. It's a very real war. Physical wars that are fought in the flesh are a lot easier for us to identify. We see what's going on in Ukraine and Israel. We've seen what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria over recent years. In fact, in the last 20 years that the United States has been involved in wars, 20 plus years now, in wars over there. And we see those wars and we're like, well, that's war. But what I want to tell you is this is the same war, right? Because those are just manifestations of the same war that we're fighting here in Long Beach, California. The enemy's the same, right? The root is the same. It comes from a fallen world full of sin. The enemy, the same enemy, our common enemy, right, wants violence and conflict and warfare. That's a result of that sin, right? And so when we understand that it's not just war, it's a real war, and it's the war. And then we need to understand it's our job to fight it. The reason that Jesus Christ left the church here on earth was to fight that war. So you are all now part of a special operations unit, right? Commissioned by the Great Commission to fight this war. That makes sense? That's where our security comes from. It comes from understanding that because we're in a war, there's going to be danger. We're going to have to endure hardness. And this is some of the things that I spoke about last time that I was here. But what I want to talk about today is I want to invite everyone to enlist in this war. And I want to talk a little bit about what that looks like and maybe what that means. There's been a couple of times in U.S. history when enlisting in battles, enlisting in the military, enlistment swelled. And the first one of those times was after Pearl Harbor was bombed. Right? People were lined up outside recruiters' offices, ready to get in, ready to enlist, ready to join the military. And it was a cause bigger than themselves in defense of their country that they were willing to enlist. Same thing happened after 9/11. I would wager that most of the veterans in here today, besides some of the older guys, most of the veterans in here today joined post 9/11 or thereabouts and probably served overseas post 9/11. There was a huge swell in enlistments that happened there because the American people said, hey, we're at war. There's a cause. We need to get in. We need to get into this war. And once a soldier enlists in the war, they receive orders, right? And a lot of times Christians today are looking, we're looking for orders. But I think sometimes it's because we haven't enlisted yet. So let's look at that. Let's look at a few scriptures here. I'm going to have you bouncing around in the Bible a little bit tonight. So try to chase me around as I go through these scriptures. We're going to start out in Matthew chapter 16. And we're going to read a few verses here and a couple other spots. And we're going to dive into talking about how to enlist, or maybe more aptly, what it looks like to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. Because in here we don't call ourselves soldiers necessarily, but we certainly call ourselves disciples. And we're going to look at what the parallels are there. Matthew chapter 16, we're going to look at verse 24 to start with, 24 to 28. Jesus is talking there. And then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall find it. Let's flip over a few pages to Mark chapter 8. I'm going to flip there with you. Mark chapter 8, we're going to read verse 34. Mark 8, 34 says, and when he had called the people unto him with his disciples, also he said unto them, whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Let's look over at Luke 9. I know you just made it to Mark chapter 8. Now I'm having you flip over to Luke chapter 9. We're going to go through our Bibles a little bit tonight. Luke chapter 9, verse 23, we're going to look at, and 24. 23 says, and he said to them all, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. And then let's end up for a minute here in Luke chapter 14. A few pages over. Let's look at verse 25 to 33. Luke 14:25 says, and then there were great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation, is not able to finish it. And all that belong and all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an ambassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath cannot be my disciple. So we're seeing kind of a common theme in these verses here, in these passages, that Jesus repeats. And perhaps it's the same event, but each one of the apostles that wrote Matthew, Mark, and Luke all wrote the same thing that Jesus said. It seems like it's an important thing that he said here. And if you look at the context, it's very important. Jesus is saying, if any man's going to be my disciple, this is the qualifications. This is what's needed. This is what you're going to have to do if you want to be my disciple. Here's how to get in. And we're going to break that sort of like a formula. I like formulas. I like logical progressions of things, just kind of how my brain works. And so we're going to break that formula down a little bit and dig into it a little bit. And we're going to start with kind of the first word in that formula, which was if. I like that part of it because that's a big question mark. If any man will come after me. I don't think Jesus is talking about salvation here. In fact, I know he's not talking about salvation here because we know about salvation is that it's free. It doesn't have any strings attached. It was a gift. There's nothing that we could have done to secure our salvation. There's nothing that we can do to earn it. Right? It's a free gift. And up until the point where you realize your need, hey, I'm just a person. I've done wrong. I've sinned. I can't save myself. I'm separated from God because of that sin, and there's nothing that I can do to change that. But Jesus did that for me. Understanding that I'm a sinner, I turn and accept that gift that he gave me. I can't save me. Only he can save me. Only faith in what he did can save me. That's free, right? I think we understand that. And if that's not something that you've ever done, or if you're thinking about it, or if you're on the fence, or if it's something you're wondering about, man, that's where you got to start, right? Nothing else can move forward in your life until you come to Jesus and say, I'm sorry, please save me, right? But I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about here in this kind of series, in this formula that we're looking at. I don't think that's what he's talking about here. I think he's specifically talking about being a disciple of his. And it's not the same thing. It's a choice. In Romans 12, verse 1, I'm not going to go there yet because I'm going to go there in a few minutes. Paul says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies. He says, brethren. He's talking to the believers there, right? And so this is a big choice for us. And I kind of like do a little parallel side by side with being a disciple of Jesus Christ and joining the military and going to war on behalf of your country. Because it's a big decision at first. It's a big decision to make. Now, on this hand, not everybody can serve in the military. Many people who have tried weren't able to. I have many friends who would have liked to join or tried to join the military, and they weren't able to for some reason or another, right? But on this side, man, this is worth it. And you can do this. You can become a disciple of Jesus Christ. In fact, like Paul, I would beseech you, by the mercies of God, that you do that. But it's a big if. There's a really good kind of a parallel to this we see in the children of Israel. You know, when the children of Israel following Moses and they came to the Jordan River to cross over into the Promised Land, and we know the story how Moses sent spies into the land and they spied it out and they said, hey, this is too big for us. Like, there's no way we can do it. But that's what they were supposed to do, right? That's what God had commanded them to do. We know that God would have performed the miracles needed for them to succeed. But under the leadership of Moses, the children of Israel took a different choice, didn't they? They chose to rebel. They chose to not do the thing that God had commissioned and set forth for them to do, right? And so they were sort of subjected to wandering in the wilderness for 40 years and living a life that, while it was a life, the real purpose, the real true purpose for which they were there was not accomplished. And they could never regain that. They could never go back and do that again. They repented, but God wouldn't let them turn around and go back into the promised land and try again to do what God had told them to do. They were out. But they were still God's people. Right? While they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, God still took care of them. God still loved them. They were still God's people. It's just that because of their choice, out of fear, not to trust and not to follow, that they were no longer able to fulfill the job God had given them to do. Right? That's a sad testament. That's a sad thought. It's a sad example that for 40 years, that whole generation, they had good lives. Maybe they had raised good families. Maybe they had a good time. But they had a purpose, and they were not able to live that purpose. They were not able to accomplish what the creator of the universe had given them to accomplish. And that's sad. Under the leadership of Joshua, the children of Israel come back to the Jordan River, right? And it's a completely different story, isn't it? It's a different story there. They act in faith and courage. They move first, and God opens doors, right? They obey, and God provides. That's the pattern we see. They step foot in the river, and God parts the river. They walk around the walls of Jericho. God makes the walls fall down. By the way, tactically speaking, that's a real poor way to tackle a city. Not advisable to walk around. If somebody's out in the street and they're trying to mug you, I don't think walking in circles around them seven times is really going to do a lot of good for you, right? I can talk about some better tactics, maybe. Maybe just giving them your wallet's not a bad idea, too, right? But that was the pattern. They obeyed, and then God provided. And the children of Israel accomplished the purpose for their life. We're in a different time now, right? God has a different purpose for your life now and here in this time. As these days are growing darker in our society, God has a purpose for you to do. You're here for such a time as this, to do a job that, by the way, you were commissioned to do, to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. I think this verse is alluding to a choice. Right? If any man will come after me, if you want to accomplish the purpose that God has given for your life, he invites you to give it to him. He's inviting you to be his disciple. He will allow you, now this is mind-blowing, the God that created the universe will allow you to work for him. That's fantastic. That's awesome. But it's a choice that we have to make. The next thing we see here, Jesus says you have to deny yourself. I think really when we look at denying yourself, it's not like not doing the things you want to do or giving up on some stuff that you like. I think it's more of a transfer of ownership. Ownership from here and ownership of me to ownership to God, right? I mentioned Romans 12:1. If you want, turn there with me. I'm not going to turn there. I'm just going to quote it. It says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice that's holy, acceptable unto God, because it's your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The first thing we got to transfer ownership of is us, right? Pastor talked about giving this morning, which is great and good that we should talk about giving. It's important for us to talk about giving. We're not really good often at that. Some of us are, some of us are not. You know, some of us get emotional attachments to our things because there are things, and it's difficult for us to get rid of or give up some of our things. But I think it's not so difficult if we don't have things, including us, right? 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I'm going to flip there really quick. Paul's talking about a group here. that I think did it right. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, he's talking about the churches of Macedonia. Verse 2, he says, how then in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded into the riches of their liberality. That means their giving. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power, more than they were capable of doing, they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take it unto us, the fellowship and the ministering of the saints. This is the important part. Verse 5. And this they did not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord. Right? That's where you got to start. That's where it all starts. Because all of the possession that we have begins with us possessing us. God created us with a free will. Do you know who owns you? You do. God created you that way. You will make your own choices. You will decide. You can decide to accept that gift of salvation that he's provided for you so that he can have fellowship with you. God wants to have fellowship with you. You have a choice to do that, right? You own you. Freely, the first step is to take you and say, God, I want you to take me. Right? I talk about this often. We have this kind of concept of surrender in the Christian. It's kind of a terminology, I guess, sort of Christian terminology, surrender. And I know what we're talking about when we talk about surrender, but I tend to not like the phrase. Because from a military's perspective, surrender is something you do when you're out of options. When the enemy has you surrounded and you're beat, you've got to surrender. I give up. And a lot of times that's what God does to us. When God has something for us to do, he'll chase us down until we're like, you're right, Lord, I'm sorry, I give up, I'll do what you want. But how much better would it be if we kind of take that mindset and flip it on its ear? And instead of waiting for God to call us and then playing a game of tug of war with him, we just said, pick me. Like, I'm over here, I want to do something. I have a purpose in this life. For me to breathe on this earth, there's a purpose for me. And it's to reach people for you. Let me help. Put me in, coach. Right? That's the mindset I think we have to have. In fact, I think, really, if we could just get a glimpse, just like a crack in the door of the glory of God, we could just see, just like not enough to kill us, because the Bible says if you could see God's glory, you would die. But just a crack in the door. I think we'd be shoving each other out of the way to work for God. You know what I mean? I think Oscar would be elbowing Eli right off the stage to get up here. And I don't know about that. I think you'd be pushing each other out of the way to go to work for God. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to be a pastor and everybody needs to be a missionary. Everybody needs to be a soldier. Everybody needs to be a full-time Christian. There's not part-time Christians. Now, there's some roles where God has ordained that people would do those roles full-time to take care of his church and take care of his people, but there's not any part-time roles. There's not any... Just because the officer's in charge of the unit doesn't mean the soldiers in the unit don't have to put full-time effort into fighting the war. Officers can't fight the war by themselves. In fact, officers can't do a whole lot by themselves, really anything at all. That's right. They need grunts. They need soldiers full time. We need to transfer ownership of ourselves, right? The verse goes on to say it's our reasonable service, right? I've heard people say, well, those are dangerous prayers. You know what I mean? I've heard people say that. Giving yourself to God, holy, that's dangerous prayer. I don't think it is. I think it's reasonable. Because of what he did for me, I think it's reasonable for me to do that. In fact, I think I should be desperate. I think I should be desperate to work for God. The Bible says, or those two verses end with, that you may prove what that good and acceptable and perfect will of God is. I know as a young person, I was really, spent a lot of time wondering what the will of God was for my life. And I could never have seen what it's become at that stage in my life. But that's what I was looking for, like this clear view into the future of what God's will was for my life. I just wanted to get, you know, a good roadmap. Right? And I just didn't get that. God didn't give that to me. Right? I think a lot of us are wondering, like, what's God's will for me? What's God? I'm not getting direction. And I talked to the guys on Saturday. I was like, hey, there's several of us who were formerly in the military and we're not now. We are not expecting to get a letter in the mail from the United States military saying report for duty to Fort Irwin. Right, brother? We're not expecting to get a phone call that says 0600, show up. And the reason we're not expecting to get direction from the United States military is because we're not in it any longer. We're not in. I think one of the reasons that a lot of Christians aren't getting direction from the Lord is because they haven't got in yet. They didn't present themselves as a living sacrifice. They haven't transferred ownership of, first of all, me. Everything else kind of follows. There's other things to transfer ownership of. The obvious one is our possessions. That's the obvious one. We often talk about that when it comes to missions conference time or, you know, church project time. We talk of giving, right? And that's needful. Guess what? God doesn't need your money. You need to give God your money for you. He's not impressed by it. It's for us. It's for us that we give to God. It's for our benefit that we can sacrifice our bounty to him. It's to our credit. He blesses us for giving. He doesn't need us, right? Possessions are an easy one. In the early church, we look in the beginning of Acts. I'm going to skip it for the sake of time, but we read in the early church how everyone who had property or lands or possessions, they sold it, and they brought everything to the church. Now, I'm not recommending that all of you go out and sell all your stuff and show up on Monday saying, Pastor Reynolds, I'm here. I sold everything. Here's all my money. Put me to work. I'm not recommending that. I'm not. Talk to pastor first, right? Pastor can steer you in that direction. But that's what the early church did. And I think the reason they did that was because they understood the importance of the task. I think they understood how important the mission was that they were given, and they were willing to take everything else that they had in this life and throw it at the mission. Everything, lands, possessions, money, whatever, they didn't care. It's all about getting the work done. I think that's why they did that. One of the ones, though, that we don't think of that much, possessions, that's kind of an easy one, obvious one, I should say. But one of the things I don't think we think about very much is expectations. Transferring ownership of our expectations to God. Because when we start to have expectations not get met, we start to get real poopy about it. If you don't believe me, when was the last time you skipped breakfast? How'd you feel? How about if you skipped lunch after that? How's that set with you? When is the last time you weren't able to eat dinner? Have you not been able to eat dinner before? I would assume at some point in your life there was a time when you had to skip something that you were unhappy about. Right? Here's a big one. When is the last time you didn't get enough sleep because you didn't have time? How were you the next day? A little grumpy? Yeah? Some of those expectations got stepped on a little bit, didn't they? Now, Americans, we have a lot of expectations. We really do. I think it's a good idea for everybody to take a missions trip to some place. I've been most recently to Sierra Leone. They're very poor there. If they don't grow food, they don't eat. They frequently go without very many things. And I think it'd be do good for Christians in America to go and visit and minister to people in countries like that. Because I think when we come back here, we'd realize, wow, I think we'd be so much more grateful. I think we'd be wildly ecstatic about the significant and magnificent wealth and comfort we have in this country. I think we would. Because, see, our expectations kind of encapsulate things like we expect to live in a house. You know, I can speak to this because I went through this transition of no longer living in a house and living in an RV. For the last 4 years, we've lived in an RV. And can I tell you something? At first, that transition was difficult mentally. That expectation was difficult to give up. It went with some tears to not live in a house anymore, right? We expect to have a vehicle to drive, a job to create income with, food to eat. There's a lot of expectations we have. We expect health benefits, right? Kind of, these are kind of some expectations we have. I think Sometimes we need to take those expectations, maybe even identify what they are, and transfer ownership of those. Lord, for your sake, I'd be willing to suffer whatever I have to. For your sake, I'm willing to be uncomfortable. For your sake, I'm willing to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And I think if we can take those expectations and we can give those to God, I think we're going to be a whole lot more grateful and a whole lot more happy while we're serving him. Because that's the cost of entrance to be a disciple, is to transfer ownership of this stuff and give it to him. The next part of this we see is take up the cross. That's counting the cost, making a reckoning of what it costs to serve God. It's understanding that there's not anything on this earth and not anything on this planet that's too high of a cost to pay for serving God. Nothing is too high of a cost to pay for serving God. Now that can be scary. Depending on where you are and what you are doing, that can be scary, can't it? Right? Even life-threatening, dare I say. It's not acting in faith when we see the outcome. If we see what it's going to cost to do what God has asked us to do, that's not necessarily faith. Faith is when we don't see that outcome. Faith is taking that cost and saying, if it's going to cost me this, I'm willing to pay that. I had a phenomenal example of that here not so long ago. It would have been a year ago in January when I took my first trip to Sierra Leone. And I went with a group of people, and on that group there was a young man who was 19 years old. And this was his second mission trip. And his family hadn't really been involved in missions before. Great godly family, large family, faithful to church, but not really involved in missions before that. And Elijah was like, I'm going to Africa. I'm going to go serve the Lord in missions. And his brother dropped him off at the airport and said, hey, I want you to think about this thing before you got on this plane. He said, this is Africa. He was going to Sierra Leone. It's remote, bush country. There's disease. There's animals. There's bad people out there. There's still villages in Sierra Leone where they sacrifice human beings. He's like, it could be dangerous. You could die. And Elijah told his brother, he says, it doesn't matter. It's worth it. And those words have been immortalized. Because 2 weeks after returning to the United States, he died of a rare form of malaria. He counted the cost. Now that's kind of a scary thing. But he was willing to pay whatever the price was. He took up the cross. He counted the cost. Was that a bad thing? It was sad to us, wasn't it? I don't think Elijah minds. I don't think Elijah's unhappy about it right now. He's hanging out with Jesus right now. Right? That's glorious. He gave his life to bring the gospel to people who had never heard it before. And that's a worthy way to go. But he counted the cost before he went. He said, if that's what it costs, I'm willing to pay it. We have examples like that all through the Bible. One of my favorites is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel in the fiery furnace. They're like, hey, bow down to the statue when you hear the music. And they said, we're not going to bow down to the statue. And he said, no, I'm going to throw you in the fire if you don't bow down to the statue. And they literally said, we're not careful to answer you. Said, this isn't a hard decision for us. We're not doing it. And if you throw us in the fire, we're still not doing it. And if we burn to death and die, we're still not doing it. God's able to save us from that furnace. But if he doesn't, they said, but if not, we're still not going to obey you. Now that was a great outcome, wasn't it? Like we think, oh, glorious outcome. They got saved out of the fire, right? And it was a miracle. And it was a testament to the entire nation, the entire empire at the time that ruled the entire world, of the power of God. And that was a beautiful thing. But what about like the stoning of Stephen? He made the same call, didn't he? And he suffered the sacrifice for it, didn't he? Is that any less of a happy ending? I don't think so. I don't think Stephen thinks so either. I think Stephen's grateful that he was willing to count the cost, that he was willing to put his life on the line. One of the reasons that it's scary when people enlist in the military, and I know this because my mother told me so, is because they're afraid they're going to die. My mother was afraid I was going to die. Because people die in the military. That happens frequently. I know I have friends that did, right? It's scary. But we're willing to count the cost of that to serve our country. Many of us already did. How much more shouldn't we be willing to count the cost to serve the Lord, to accomplish the thing that God gave us to do while we exist on this planet? Because nothing else, at the end of our days, however long those days are, nothing else is going to matter except for what we did for the Lord, except for accomplishing the purpose He gave us to do. The last part of this, maybe one of my favorite parts, it says, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, let him take up his cross, right? And it says, follow me. If we look at what discipleship looked like back in the day, and what the disciples did when they were following Jesus, you know, they were out there fishing their boats, hauling in nets, and Jesus said, follow me. And they were just like, dropped their nets and followed him, right? They said, we're going to put this down, and we're going to be your disciple, we're going to follow you. It wasn't a part-time commitment, right? But that's, I'm afraid, what Christianity has become in America is a part-time commitment. Now, I know this is the Sunday night crowd, so these are the faithful few, right? These are the people who go to church on Sunday night and Sunday morning and Wednesday night, and we serve God 3 days a week, right? I'm afraid in a lot of places and with a lot of people, that's what Christianity has become. Is something that we do because it's important. There came a point in my life when I got so busy chasing so many things, chasing success, different businesses, different projects, just got too busy, and I finally said, God, please just take everything away that's not from you. And I did that for about 3 months, and really what happened is I got desperate. I got to a place where I got desperate for God to take away what He hadn't given me to do. I got desperate for Him to take my life and give me something to do. And He obliged. He took everything. Job, house, all of it. Right? I'm afraid before that happened that I was a part-time Christian. Right? My faith was very important to me. It was really the foundation of my life. I was faithful in church and I taught my kids that. But the problem was it was just part. It was only a part of my life. Maybe it was the foundation, but it was only part of my life. I wasn't really following Him completely. I think if we're really going to follow Him, our faith becomes not just something we do, right? Some days that we go to church, some Saturdays that we maybe go out and pass some tracts. We have to take it beyond that. It needs to become our entire life. This organization right here is the most important thing that you have going on in this world. What you're doing outside of this can come and go, and it probably will. Jobs will come and go. Careers will come and go. Businesses, you've got a business, businesses can come and go. This is the most important thing you have. This is the unit that's fighting the war. This should be a big part of our life, right? Following Jesus should be the biggest thing, should be the only thing at the center of everything. Giving ourselves to Him, and whatever He gives us to do, great. If He gives us a job to work, fantastic. If He allows us to build a business, that's great. Let's use it, let's take it, and let's put it into the fight. Let's dedicate it to the job that we've been given to do. Let's accomplish the purpose that He's given us to accomplish. I'll wrap up with this really quick. Matthew 10, verse 39. Matthew 10, 39. Jesus says, he that findeth his life shall lose it. And he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. I think we're maybe coming to a point in history when if we concern ourselves with saving our lives, things might not turn out very well. I think socially, politically, we're headed for bad places in this country. I really think so. And I think Jesus is coming back soon, but I don't know when. I would like to think he's coming back before things get really bad, but you know what? There's a lot of places in this world where that's not the case. I think one of the things we tend to have in our minds is as Christians here in America, is when things get bad, Jesus is going to come back and pull us out of it. The Bible doesn't say how bad things are going to get before he comes back. And we don't know what this country is going to go through. We don't know what we're going to go through. But I think if we focus on losing our lives for his sake, on giving ourselves to him, we can rest knowing that he's got control of that. And no matter what happens in this world around us, no matter how bad things get geopolitically or socially, economically, it's not going to matter if you put yourself in God's hands. If you try and save your life, you can lose it. But if you lose your life for his sake, you'll find it.